Hello and welcome to the America Magazine podcast for the week of August 1st through 8th. And this week we're excited to be joined by former associate editor Matt Malone. Welcome, Matt.
Thank you very much.
I should say, Deacon Matt Malone, you've recently been ordained a deacon, correct?
I was indeed, yeah, back on April 30th in London.
So Matt had been a Jesuit scholastic here in America, now studying theology, and just had his diaconate ordination. So congratulations.
Thank you very much.
We're here to talk about the presidential primaries, and I feel a little guilty doing it so early in the race, but it seems like everybody has already started talking about this, and even the bishops are going to probably comment on the looking forward to the 2012 election in their November meeting. So now is probably as good a time as ever. So what's the first major marker we should be looking to, Matt, specifically with the Republican contenders?
Well, I think there are two, really. One, we have we want to see where people are in the money primary. And I think we're still waiting on the numbers from the FEC for the last quarter on that. But, you know, it would be shocking if Romney weren't leading the pack there. You know, he has had fantastic fundraising operation, and he actually has made very few public appearances, which he's minimized those appearances for other political reasons. But a big reason why he's minimized those appearances is because he's on the phones and he's at fundraisers and he's at cocktail parties and he is working all over the country to raise money. So it'd be shocking if he weren't in first place. The big question is who's coming in there behind him, right? And, you know, where are people like Pawlenty, and where are people like Michelle Bachmann and so forth? So that'll be important to look for. On August 13th, we have the straw poll in Ames, Iowa, which is, you know, the straw poll isn't necessarily a good predictor of the eventual outcome in Iowa, but it can give certain candidates, it can give a certain kind of candidate momentum and help them to raise money and to build a field organization. So those are the two markers that really, to me, that, you know, as we're looking ahead over the next couple of months, that I would be looking at. But, you know, the thing that, I mean, neither of those things is really going to really tell us how things are going to turn out in, you know, come early 2012, precisely because there are so many variables. One, the field isn't even really set yet. Right, we're still waiting on people like Palin. We're waiting on people like Rick Perry from Texas. We're waiting on people, even people like Rudy Giuliani and so forth, to let us know, you know, whether they're in or whether they're out. Though, you know, Palin continues to give signs that she's serious about it. She's going to speak in Iowa and on Labor Day, I think. The other thing is, even though, you know, Romney will lead the pack in all likelihood in fundraising, we learned in the last cycle that because there are a few very well-funded, very well-organized factions in the Republican Party, right, that can put field troops on the ground very quickly, deploy them very effectively, you can go far in the Republican primaries with relatively little money. And exhibit A there is Mike Huckabee, who went very, very far in the Republican primaries last time around, and basically on a shoestring of a budget.
The conventional wisdom seems to be that Michelle Bachmann will take the Iowa caucus on August 13th.
What's her draw? I mean, is she playing the role of the Mike Huckabee in this round?
I think so. I mean, in part, right? There's a scramble going on right now for the religious right in the party, and she seems to be a favorite of it. In many ways, she seems to be a kind of more sensible, more grounded, less explosive Sarah Palin, right? You know, she. But she has that kind of she has that mom quality about her, right? She has that strong female leadership quality that you know, that makes her stand out in the pack, right? She has a pretty interesting biography, right? And she is from Iowa, so you know, although she had an unfortunate introduction to the people of Iowa, right? Or reintroduction to the people of Iowa, and talking about her experience with John Wayne and all
right,
that.
Right, this is where she thought John Wayne was born in the town of Waterloo, when in fact it was John Wayne Gacy. So.
Right, yeah, exactly, that's right, yeah. But I think in she is probably one of the factors that Sarah Palin is taking into consideration when, you know, she's making her assessment, because in many ways they're very similar and they're going to draw on similar bases. But it seems to me that, you know, Sarah needs to really get off of the fence here pretty quickly. I don't, you know, this wait and see approach that she's taking, you know, it has an advantage in that throughout, you know, all of, you know, the budget crisis and with the debt limit and, you know, the early, you know, carping back and forth among the candidates about all of that, she's, you know, been above the fray and not, hasn't done any damage to her prospective candidacy because she hasn't had to say anything about it, right? Because she's not officially a candidate. But at the same time, I mean, Michelle Bachmann is out there, you know, pounding on doors and making phone calls, and she's making those phone calls to the very same people that, that Palin would hope to appeal.
Yeah, it would seem to me that they could very easily split the vote if they were wound up both in the field, and I think you're right that that's part of Palin's calculation at this point. But what did you make of the Palin bus tour when she was going around saying that she was not campaigning, but yet she showed up in New Hampshire on the same day that Romney was announcing? So she's up to something.
Right. Well, that's really classic Palin, right? In a way, it's her genius. You know, I mean, I'm not one of those people that thinks that Sarah Palin is dumb, right? I don't think she is. I think she's actually very bright. And she has, and some of the evidence of that is this, the strategy that she has to go out there and say something like, I am not campaigning right now, even though she is campaigning, right? And then when the media points out that, you know, she is in fact campaigning, right, she stands up in front of a GOP fundraiser and says, look at the media, right? The liberal left media, right? They're not listening to what I'm saying. They're once again, on, you know, they have their own agenda and all the rest. And it's actually a very effective kind of strategy. And she's very bright, I think.
You're right. I think perhaps she doesn't do the best under, you know, under the Klieg lights and interviews, but I think she's more savvy than people give her credit for. Let's turn to Romney again. I mean, people have said this over and over, but the Republicans always nominate the next in line,
right.
Whether it was, you know, George H.W. Or McCain last time.
Bob Dole, exactly.
Of course. So it seems like Romney is that obvious candidate. Is there kind of just this inexorable movement towards Romney, or could things change in the next few months?
Well, I think that there's a... I think things could definitely change. You're right. I mean, historically, that's how the Republican Party has moved. It's it tends to elevate the heir apparent, right, or the heir presumptive in this case. But it's I think that though there are a couple of variables in this race that haven't been present previously, and one is Romney has a good deal of baggage with Republicans. You know, his various incarnations, you know, his evolving positions on various issues, and his Mormonism, which makes him very unpopular among a certain faction of conservative Republican voters. There's also the Tea Party faction, right, which is this new and powerful force in the Republican Party. And nobody knows where those folks are going to go and how they're going to behave. And Romney is not their immediate choice, it would seem to me.
Well, the knock against Romney is that he, you know, like John Kerry, that he's flip-flopped on all these issues and he's a bit of a cipher. You grew up in Massachusetts, spent a lot of time there. Did you have much? What was your experience of him as governor? Were you living in the state at that time?
Yeah, I was. And in 1994, I was involved in politics very closely, and that was the toughest race that Ted Kennedy ever had, right, was for the re-election of the U.S. Senate in 1994. He almost lost it. He was coming out of situations with his family and all the rest that caused scandal and had caused people to have doubts, and it was also a big Republican year. So he had a really, really tough race that year, precisely because he was running against Mitt Romney, but a very different Mitt Romney. I mean, Mitt Romney was casting himself more in the left-wing or liberal Republican mold at that time. You know, he was relatively pro-gay, he was pro-choice, and he was in favor of any number of social initiatives. He, I mean, it was back in 94 that he originally proposed something for the extension of healthcare coverage that eventually, you know, he got through as governor. So, I mean, he was a major threat to Ted Kennedy, and that was because he was running to the left. And because that's the only way you could be a threat to Ted Kennedy in Massachusetts, right? And his evolution over the years on, that's one way of putting it, right? Others might say that he's flip-flopped or that he's insincere. But, I mean, we definitely have several versions of Mitt Romney. In fact, even in the last election cycle, we had several versions of Mitt Romney, right? We had the passionate family values Mitt Romney. We had the tough business-minded, I can fix the economy Mitt Romney. We had the Mitt Romney who was standing up to religious intolerance. So the question remains, who is he? And I think Republican voters, primary voters, are asking that question right now. It's interesting, you know, if he actually won the nomination and won the White House, right, he could be the first person elected to the presidency who lost their home state.
Yes, I could easily see that happening. Obviously, right now he seems to be focusing on the jobs, you know, economy
right.
line, and that's going to be his knock on Obama. Maybe at the end we'll return to Obama's prospects, but let's just hit some of the other candidates briefly here. Tim Pawlenty, he's not that well-known around the country, but he seems to be doing fairly well and has emerged as one of Romney's critics, so mm-hmm. he's a force to contend with, it seems.
No, I think that's true. And he, Tim Pawlenty is trying to cast himself in the role of the sensible, business-minded, let's get down to brass tacks, let's fix this thing, Republican. And the question is that going to sell in this year? One of the things that's really interesting to me and we see this when every time Tim Pawlenty makes an attempt to move more toward the left, the primary Republican primary voters pull him back to the right. And you know, I think that's very interesting, because one of the problems that we're having in American politics right now is that politicians on both sides of the aisle cannot move toward the aisle, right? They cannot move toward the center. We've had, and we're seeing this now. We're seeing it in the debate over the debt ceiling. You don't have a solid centrist element in American federal politics at the moment. You know, there are no John Chafees, there are no Nelson Rockefellers, there are no Elliot Richardsons, there are no Sam Nunns. You know, we don't have a group of people who can come together in a room and stand each other's company and talk to each other like adults. And that's hugely problematic. I mean, throughout most of the 20th century, you know, the country's social legislation was brought about through a coalition of left-wing Republicans and Blue Dog Democrats, and neither of those factions really exist any longer. And that has seriously impoverished our politics, I think.
Yes, especially since 2010, a lot of those Blue Dog Democrats lost their seats. So
right.
It's in that case, in that sense, it's a relatively recent phenomenon. A couple of people, Rudy Giuliani, George Pataki, New Yorkers mm-hmm. who could join the race.
Yep, both of them have been talked about. You know, Giuliani is, you know, they say there was a piece in the Post that said that he was thinking seriously about it. And I think he'll probably run only if he thinks that no one else in the field could beat Obama. But, you know, Giuliani would really have to reinvent himself as a candidate because he was a pretty bad one last time around. He fumbled a lot. There was none of that great, managerial, visionary skill for which he became known as mayor of New York, particularly after 9/11. He seemed unable to really manage his own campaign, and he seemed unable to stay on message. He's going to have to take stock, right, of himself and his skills as a candidate. I think it's far less likely that Pataki would get into the race. My own guess is that he probably just doesn't have it in his gut. He doesn't have the fire in his belly for it.
It's been a while since he's been out now, so it would seem to be,
yeah.
It would take a lot to pull him back in.
Though he's going out there. He's been out to Des Moines a couple of times and, speaking and so forth. But my guess is he's probably angling for something else.
Ah, interesting. finally, let's look at Obama's prospects. I mean, we're looking at an unemployment rate over 9 at this point, and that's what Mitt Romney is going to hammer away at. And maybe you can tell me when the last president who won re-election with that kind of unemployment number. So on paper, it doesn't look good for Obama, but the field of Republicans isn't looking very strong either.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, the higher that number is, the less likely it is that Obama will be elected president. And no president has been re-elected with that number, I think, since Franklin Roosevelt. But at the same time, you know, one has to take into account that there was an interesting piece in the Times not too long ago about that's only one indicator, one factor among many that can help us understand what might happen in an election. But the Republicans still need to field a candidate that the American people think will be substantially better than what they have now. And it's not clear that that candidate is in the current field, right, of declared candidates. So they need to field a strong candidate. There needs to be, from the Republican point of view, politically speaking, there needs to be minimal change in the economy. It has to continue to stagnate. And, you know, I think that the change that is going to be proposed by the Republican nominee has to be credible, right? And for it to be credible, it's going to have to be bold. And I'm not sure that American politics permits that now at this moment, apart from, you know, certain fringe candidates.
Well, we're speaking in July of 2011. Maybe we'll have another podcast in July of 2012, and I'm sure things will be radically different. Hopefully by then we'll have raised the debt ceiling. Or maybe
yes,
we'll be...
hopefully we'll still be here.
Or maybe we'll be arguing about it all over again, if that's one of the plans, is to, you know, do this again next year. But
right, and you can see why the Democrats want to avoid that.
Yeah. Yeah,
that makes sense.
Well, Matt Malone, we want to thank you for spending a few minutes with us.
My pleasure.